if I could help one pet parent not go through what I went through with Shamrock, and one dog to not have to suffer the way Shamrock did.
Welcome to the Believe in Dog podcast. I'm your host, Erin Scott, and I've been a dog mom for over 20 years. On this podcast, we are going to celebrate the amazing parts of being a pet parent. We're going to navigate the challenges together and learn everything that dog moms and dog dads should know. I believe that dogs can show up in our lives as healers, as teachers, and as inspirations, and I can't wait to get started. This is Believe in Dog. Welcome to episode 93 of the Believe in Dog podcast. I'm your host, Erin Scott, and thank you so much for being here today. Today we are talking to Francine Barish-Stern, and Francine is a dog mom after my own heart. As many of you know, I kind of consider myself a bit of a dog health nerd, and it's because I've been through so many strange and unusual health issues with my dogs over the years. And look, I love veterinarians. Some of my favorite people are veterinarians. But honestly, as a whole, there have been numerous times that I have been let down by the veterinary industry. And it makes me a little gun shy, right? And I'm one of those people that's like, once I've experienced something for myself the first time that's negative, I'm like super hyper vigilant on high alert to make sure that nothing like that ever happens to me again. And not only to me, but I also want to let everybody else in my world, in my life, other dog parents know that they should be on the lookout for this. And one of the things that we experienced was with our first dog, Lucy. Lucy is, of course, the logo for the Believe in Dog podcast. And she had a really strange form of cancer called insulinoma. And this presented itself at first by her having partial seizures or focal seizures that then went into full-blown, what we would consider in a person, a grand mal seizure. And it's a pretty terrifying thing to see your dog have a seizure. And we struggled for several months to get the right diagnosis for her, to get all of this under control. And it was horrible to keep seeing her have seizures. And the vast majority of dogs that have seizures are either having some form of epilepsy, or if they're older dogs, perhaps it's a brain tumor. Insulinoma is an unusual reason for a dog to be having a seizure, and it's caused by low blood sugar. Basically, it's a cancer that causes the pancreas to overproduce insulin, produce so much insulin that it drives the blood sugar down to dangerous levels, and your dog has seizures because of these low blood sugar levels. And this is an unusual occurrence. And so therefore, when Lucy was having low blood sugar readings, nobody was taking notice to this. And she continued to suffer. And it took me getting like a third opinion before somebody went through the vet records, the medical records, and discovered what was going on with my Lucy. And that was incredibly frustrating. We had spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars and had numerous vet appointments and had been told numerous times, well, her blood work looks great. But no, it actually didn't. And nobody was looking at this blood sugar thing. And that was maddening to me, right? And this was just over the course of a couple months. And now, whenever somebody in my life says that their dog is having seizures, one of the first things I say is, you know, can you humor me and ask them to do a fasting blood sugar test on your dog? Just to rule out that it could be this other crazy illness of insulinoma. Because I actually think it's really underdiagnosed because people don't think about it as a possible cause of a diagnosis. And we just went through this over a few months. And Francine's going to tell us the story today of her dog Shamrock and how she struggled for years to get the right diagnosis for Shamrock. Years, I couldn't imagine. She knew that something wasn't right, but the veterinary industry that Francine was dealing with kept looking at the symptoms that Shamrock was presenting with in a very myopic way, and only looking at what was going on that particular day and not looking at things as a whole. And I feel like as pet parents, you know, this advocacy of learning how to, first of all, find the right vet that's going to listen to us. And second of all, learn how to communicate the totality of symptoms with our vet is like such an important factor, such an important skill that we have to learn. And it's up to us and up to our responsibility. And I'm so passionate about this. As you know, I have the Dog Health Journal that I created just to help pet parents do this. So I'm going to tell you more about Francine and her little dog Shamrock after this word from one of my favorite sponsors. Even though February was Pet Dental Health Month, we really need to care about our dog's dental health all year long. I recently learned that 80% of our dogs over 3 years old have active dental or periodontal disease. And dental disease is actually a sign of other inflammation in the body and can be connected to everything from cardiovascular problems, kidney problems, diabetes, certain types of cancers, joint disease. Your dog's dental health actually can affect everything in their body. And you know that I am obsessed with finding the best and healthiest products for our dogs. So I was so excited to find out about Teef. That's right, Teef. Just a tiny spoonful of Teef powder in your dog's water bowl will make a huge improvement in your dog's dental health. It's the only thing that ever made my vet stop and go, "Hey, what did you do with Penny's teeth? They actually look so much better." So forget trying to figure out how to get your dog's teeth brushed without them biting you. Forget those sticks or green chews. What you need is Teef powder, just a tiny amount in your dog's water bowl. And listeners of this podcast can save 20% on your Teef order with the code ADM. And you'll be on your way to a healthier smile for your dog without any anesthesia needed. Check out the link in the show notes to find out more about Teef and save 20% on your orders. This code will work on their cat product too. So it was around the time of Hurricane Katrina that Francine and her husband found themselves without any dogs in their house. And when they heard about the call for people to foster dogs that had been found after Hurricane Katrina, they stepped up and agreed to foster two little spaniel dogs that had been named Shamrock and Clover by their rescuers. And after 18 months, those dogs hadn't been claimed by any families that had been displaced by the hurricane, and so they officially became the dogs of Francine and her husband. And they had an awesome life together until Clover suddenly passed away due to liver cancer at around 10 years old. And Shamrock was kind of never really quite the same after that. And, you know, you'll hear a lot of things that, oh, they miss their dog companion and things like this. But in retrospect, Francine realizes that some of these behavior changes weren't just depression from losing her best doggy friend, but that Shamrock was experiencing some early changes due to canine cognitive dysfunction, also known as canine dementia, doggy dementia. There's kind of several different terms for this, but it's basically the equivalent of dementia or Alzheimer's in a human. And you might be thinking, well, I have a little puppy, and what does canine dementia have to do with my little puppy? And let me tell you, one of the things I learned from Francine's book is it has everything to do with your puppy, because the choices that we make for our dog's health today are going to affect them down the road for years to come and can influence their susceptibility to developing canine cognitive dysfunction in the future. Francine is extremely passionate about the experiences that she went through with her dog Shamrock. This wound is still very close to the surface, and she is trying so hard to spread the word to all pet parents about what kind of signs to look for in your dog, the myriad of things you can do if you think you're starting to see these changes in your dog that could lead to cognitive dysfunction, and what you can do right now today, no matter how old your dog is, to prevent your dog from having these long-term problems down the road. Francine actually interviewed more than 50 experts for her book, Shamrock's Story, From Hurricane Katrina to Doggy Dementia and Alzheimer's. She interviewed veterinarians, she interviewed holistic veterinarians, she interviewed human doctors that are experts in the field of dementia and Alzheimer's research. I've never seen such a well put together book directed at pet parents. This is full of so much information about what you can do if you already think your dog has dementia, and everything that you can do right now today to prevent your dog from getting dementia. I was shocked at some of the statistics I learned. For instance, 52% of dogs will be affected by some signs of canine cognitive dysfunction. And large breed dogs can start showing signs of dementia as early as 5 years old. Canine cognitive dysfunction can affect dogs of all breeds and all sizes. Francine is going to share with us everything that we should know about preventing canine cognitive dysfunction, about how to recognize the signs, and about the treatments that are available now. Francine has so much great information to share with us. I think you're going to love hearing from Francine Barish Stern. So we are here today with Francine Barish Stern. How are you today, Francine?
Oh, I'm doing great, Erin. And how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here. I have so much ground I hope we can cover today. You're doing such important work. But first, I always love to start off asking about your childhood experiences with pets. I'm always interested in this because I did not actually grow up with dogs or with any pets, really. I didn't even know that I liked dogs until I was 25 and my husband said, "We're getting one."
That's and an experience.
Obviously, it has changed my whole life, right? So I'm just always curious what that looks like for other people. Are you someone who grew up with pets in your life?
Absolutely. I loved dogs from the time I was very, very little. And when I was in kindergarten, actually, I cried to my mom that I wanted a dog. And suddenly a friend of hers, dog had litter. And my mom said, "Okay, we'll try it." So we took one of the puppies. Well, realizing I was only five and my brother was only about 5 years older than I was, this was probably not the greatest thing to do. But we did have the dog for quite a while and finally realized that an apartment and two young children who really can't take care of it and two parents that are working makes it a little difficult. So therefore, we found a really good family that had a lot of children that were home that could take care of the dog and always kept track of how the dog's name was Sad Sack, how she was doing. So that was my first experience. So fast forward to sixth grade, and again, one of my classmates had a pup that was in heat, and the dog got pregnant, and I was all jump up and down to my parents, "Please, please," and we did get that dog, and that dog's name was Frisky, and we had her for quite a while, and she was just the love of my life, and I would take her for walks in the Bronx where we lived. I'd be out for like 2-3 hours and my parents would be crazy thinking, "Where did I go?" But I just enjoyed being with her so much that my dogs were my best friends. And as I got older and I was working, it just wasn't possible to really give proper time to a dog. And I missed it so much that as soon as I got married, two dogs. And they both lived until, unfortunately, the time when they died. And then immediately got two more dogs who also lived until they both died. And most of these dogs died in their 20s.
Oh, wow.
One was 19, one was 22. So, you know, I have a long experience with dogs. Moved from New York and I felt lonely without my dogs and without my friends. So I finally said, "Okay, it's time." And it was around the time of Hurricane Katrina. And I saw that they were looking for anyone who could foster a dog because there were so many dogs. They were finding that they had no homes.
Yeah, I was looking at this. And first, I was almost in shock when I realized that was almost 20 years ago. It was like 19 years ago.
Absolutely. Well, that tells you the longevity of how long I had my dogs. Well, we decided to foster them. knowing the heartache in case their parents were found, but realizing that would be really important because if that were me on the other end, I would want to get my baby back.
Right.
So we waited. We had to wait actually 18 months before we were allowed to officially adopt them and call them our own, but we did. They were named by the people who found them, which was a rescue, and they called them Shamrock and Clover. And the reason was they thought they were the luckiest dogs on the earth because they were found soaking wet, huddled under a garbage dump. And nobody knew how they survived. They were only just about 15 months old. So It was really amazing that they lived through the horror. But unfortunately, living through a horror like Hurricane Katrina has its issues. And they were healthy. Nobody suspected anything. But at 10, Clover succumbed very quickly to liver cancer that they said was probably a cause of drinking dirty water and eating garbage and not being taken care of during that time. Shamrock, however, seemed to be fine. We watched every test that was possible from that point forward, but she seemed to be okay. Fast forward to after Clover died, she started to not want to sit in her favorite spots, not wag her tail, wasn't interested in playing, and the doctors all said it was depression. Well, I've since found out that stress and aggravation can be silent symptoms that cause dementia to start to surface. She was 10. When she was 13, still undiagnosed and still with issues, but fine. Except for every once in a while, she didn't bark at the stranger coming to the door or wag her tail, but she really rebounded. When she was 13, she started limping. Now, she was a Springer Spaniel, and she was used to jumping all her life. So, of course, the vets concluded it must be arthritis. It must be because of all the jumping. Put her on medication, but nothing really helped. So I took her to an acupuncturist, and they did one treatment and taught me how to do massage and doga. And within a couple of weeks, she rebounded. Mark that what I just said, because most pet parents go through the exact same thing. And either the dog rebounds or they don't. But they think, okay, that was just a physical issue, has nothing to do with anything else. Right. Again, finding out later that this was one of the primary symptoms of signs of dementia. And as the years went on, more symptoms and signs began to occur until there was no doubt that that's exactly what she had. But nobody knew it. Nobody diagnosed it until she was 16. That's 6 years.
Wow.
That's why I'm so passionate about getting this information out to pet parents. I was blind. I've had 11 dogs, and I knew nothing. I had never had a dog that had cognitive issues. So if I don't know, how about the first-time pet parent? Or how about somebody who just has puppies and really doesn't understand their care? It's scary. If you think about what dementia does to people, and that's scary.
Yeah.
Think about a little puppy who can't even tell you what's going on and what that family goes through when they watch it happen.
Yeah, I was really surprised when you told me that it is that canine dementia is the third leading cause of death in dogs.
Yes, it is. It's incredible.
We think so much about cancer that I don't always think that we think about the other ones, you know?
I don't think so either. I think people kind of concentrate on my dog's going to get cancer or my dog's going to get, you know, latter stage kidney disease when they're ready to die. But most of the time, we don't think of cognitive issues as being dog-like. We think of them in very different ways, and I'm trying to change people's thinking about it.
Well, you're definitely doing important work, and I can't wait for everyone to check out your book. Of course, we'll have links in the show notes for all the listeners. And you have this book organized into like three or four sections here. And I just thought it was, you know, so well laid out. It's so well researched. People that listen to me over on the Alternative Dog Moms know I'm a research nerd. I love when everything is cited for me. I love tracking down like the studies on things. And, you know, one of the biggest takeaways that I got from your book that I think is such an important point to make, right, is that age is not a disease.
Absolutely. It is one of the statements that I want to pound into people's heads. Because when they take their dog to a vet and the dog is 13 or more, that's the first thing they usually hear. Well, it's old age. I heard it. I heard it over and over and over again. And it was like, well, whenever you're ready, excuse me, are dogs so disposable that whenever I'm ready, I'm going to just say, okay, it's time to get rid of it. I don't think we think of people that way. And for me, my dogs have always been my babies, so I can't think of dogs that way. But I heard it over and over again, whenever you're ready. But the dog wasn't ready. There was still so much that we could do to help her that I didn't even know half of it then. With what I know now is incredible. But I keep telling pet parents, don't despair. There is so much. Even if you do a little, just something, it can be helpful. And don't give in to old age as a disease. It is not. It's not for people, and it's certainly not for dogs. Dogs can live into their 20s.
That's the hope.
Yeah, always.
So I thought that these were just some other just fascinating numbers to throw out. So you say that dogs can start showing signs as early as 7 years old. And I'd imagine that's especially true for like the larger breed dogs, you know, yeah, who are aging a little faster. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. Well, in the book, you see that we try and explain about aging. Everyone right. says 7 years for, you know, people's life. It's not necessarily true. Larger dogs age at a very different rate than smaller dogs.
Right.
So we tried to calculate so that people would understand that if you have a great mastiff, that dog at 5 could be showing symptoms that a little shih tzu is going to show at 16 or 18.
Right.
And that this disease, like cancers and other diseases, doesn't have a friend and say, oh, I'm going to go just for this breed, or I'm going to go just for this age. It doesn't happen that way. Any breed can get this disease, and any age. Dogs from actually 5 and up, depending on their size, can be vulnerable to dementia. And dementia, as we know it, can turn into symptoms just like Alzheimer's in people. And so the stages are pretty much the same. The early onset, actually the silent signs before early onset, and then the midsection where the dog is starting to show some signs but is really fine, the latter where you start to see the really serious signs, and then there's a lot of ways it can go. I've seen dogs rebound 100% even in the latter stages depending on the treatments they're given.
So one of the things I wanted to talk about just real quick is the terminology, because there's a couple different ways that you can describe it. And do they all pretty much mean the same thing if we hear cognitive decline, canine cognitive dysfunction? Is this the same as Alzheimer's and as sundowners? I've also heard it referred to. Like, are these basically all describing the same thing, or are there different?
Not completely. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sundowners is a symptom. When they say my dog has sundowners, that is actually a symptom of latter stage dementia. When a dog gets to far enough in advance of the initial signs of dementia, when they have sundowners, they can't discern the difference between day and night. And that's really what sundowners is. At that time, they may also be showing more severe signs. When you talk about cognitive decline, you're starting to talk about the first beginnings of seeing some cognitive changes. And the thing that I hope every parent will be aware of is any cognitive change in behavior, anything, no matter how small, and any change physically. All of a sudden, my dog can't walk. It falls down. It has a seizure. Yes, you want to make sure with the vet that it's nothing else. But you also have to be open-minded enough to consider that these could be the first beginning signs of a cognitive decline. When we talk about cognitive dysfunction, or you talk about canine cognitive dysfunction, now you're talking about the dog actually having dementia. Dementia is an early stage of Alzheimer's. So it's not the full-blown, the brain is totally incapable of anything. It's we're still at a stage where the dog is starting to show signs, and the signs are definitely, there's no doubt that the signs are dementia. I hope that kind of clears it up. It's very complicated, and I try and go into all of it in the book so that it makes it a lot clearer.
So one of the things I thought was fascinating is that 50% of dogs by 11 years old will have at least one sign of canine cognitive dysfunction, and that this disease is progressive. So once they start seeing one sign, more are most likely to develop within the course of 1 year. One of the notes that I took for myself was, you know, it is important to have a vet help rule out other things that it could be, such as a stroke or tick-borne illness or a brain tumor. But is this one of those things where it's kind of like a diagnosis by eliminating everything else?
There is no test right now for dementia. There's no way to tell exactly that that is what your dog has, which is, again, why with my experience with Shamrock, that it took so long for anybody to really say that's what it was. It's a process of elimination. When she started limping, immediately they go to it's a physical cause because she's a Springer Spaniel. But nobody associated or said, well, watch for other things. Look for cognitive. Look for other physical issues. Is the dog still seeing well, hearing well? Sight, hearing, smell, any senses are all monitored by the brain, as is physical. The brain tells the paws to move. The brain tells the dog that it's time to go outside. And the brain tells the dog, guess what? When you get there, you know what you're supposed to do. In dementia, the brain lacks that connection. It doesn't tell the dog you can jump or you can walk. It doesn't tell the dog go outside and go do your business. It says, stop. I don't know. It's like you take an electrical connection and you cut it in the middle and you can't get from one place to the other. That's what happens in dementia. The brain short circuits. So the dog goes outside and doesn't know what to do.
So I love you gave this acronym. I love a good acronym of DSHA. Mm-hmm. And this is signs to help you look for as your dog is getting older. So can you tell us what DSHA stands for?
Yes. Well, DSHA really is, for the easiest way to explain it for your audience, is a way to understand all of the different signs and symptoms of this disease so that you can calculate between 1 and 5 and say, this is what is happening to my dog. Well, I've got all these ones. Okay, the dog doesn't definitely have dementia. Well, I've got a lot of fives. Oh yeah, we've got to take this. And it's a piece of paper that they can take to the doctor and say, this is what I'm seeing in my dog. And it's very simple. It's not complicated where you need a medical degree to understand. My dog is limping. My dog is wetting in the house. My dog is acting crazy, clingy. There are so many symptoms that maybe one doesn't mean enough, but when you start to look at the chart, you get many. And I didn't coin the phrase Disha. It has been in the industry for many, many years. And the charts that we have were given through veterinarians and through food companies, so that it gave me a way to help any pet parent easily when they are suspicious, but the doctor's saying, no, 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 it's not, to easily be able to check the boxes and say, yeah, there's a lot of possibility here. Let me at least open the conversation with my veterinarian. I find that there are certain veterinarians that will be very open to the discussion and certain veterinarians that will not. And it's up to, I guess, the pet parent to decide how they feel about that when they do this charting.
Yeah, I think advocating for our pets is definitely one of the skills that we have to develop, or at least that's certainly been something that's played out in my life and in my pet parenting experience.
But I think it's true. Unfortunately, we don't advocate for our own health when the doctor says you need something. Very few people will balk at that and say, "Why?" or "No, I don't." But when we go to the vet for some reason and they say, your dog needs this medicine, or your dog needs this shot, or this vaccine, or this treatment, very few pet parents will speak up, and the dog can't. So I'm hoping that we learn to advocate for our pets a lot better.
So I want to run down this list. So if anybody wants to take notes, or obviously you can get Francine's book and have the Disha list. So we have disorientation, which is pretty self-explanatory. I feel like, you know, you hear about like the dog that gets lost in like the corner of the room or something. And then we have interactions. And so I thought that this was great. Like it could be if there's a change in how your dog interacts with other dogs, how your dog is interacting with other people, with you, you know, something that seems like it's not them, it's not themselves, you know, that's a sign. The sleep-wake cycle, right? Like this is like the sundowners where they're like suddenly really active at night. House soiling. The first A is activity changes. And the second A is anxiety changes. And it sounded like with Shamrock that the anxiety was a big piece that you were seeing.
Absolutely. It was such a change because as a spaniel, she was such a easygoing dog that all of a sudden she was panicked by everything. And she became so different that you wouldn't think it was the same dog. And again, when a vet tells you, well, it's just old age, she's old, or she misses her sister. That was the other one I heard a lot. And yes, maybe in the beginning I understood that, but not when you see all the other signs. And that's why Disha is so important for pet parents to be able to go through the list. And we say, staring in corners. Shamrock used to get stuck in a corner. They have no idea how to back up.
Right.
Think about being stuck in a place and you can't go anywhere. This is what was happening to my little baby. And so you start to say, somebody's got to realize that there's something more than old age going on here.
I think I might have mentioned it to you when we spoke a few weeks back that I created what I call the dog health journal that was sort of born out of my experiences with my dog Penny's health issues. And so one of the things that I incorporated into this is kind of like this list of questions to make you think about what your dog's like baseline normal is. And I was so excited when I saw this that it was kind of like, oh, like I'm on the right track here, you know, because I was thinking about things like, you know, like you had mentioned, like they weren't barking at the mailman. That was one of the things that made me realize that Penny had lost her hearing due to an ear medication reaction. Is she didn't like she always barked at the ear at the mailman, right? And all of a sudden, like within 24 hours, she's not barking at him. She's sleeping through me coming in the front door, and I'm trying to like put the pieces together and realizing, oh, we just started this ear medication, you know, and that it's a hearing thing. And anyway, I just think it's such an important exercise, right, to think about what your dog's normal is. Mm-hmm. So that way, when things change, you're like, oh, yeah, they always did used to do that, you know, and you're not trying to like remember or, you know, but like actually kind of taking a note of these things that, you know, once a year or once you like we have adopted a new dog. And so we've been trying to, you know, get to know her and, you know, think about all these different ways that she reacts to different things so that we can like establish, well, this is kind of her normal. Mm-hmm. And that way we know when something changes, right? And I think that having a way, a system for doing this is important. And these are the reasons why, right?
Well, dogs are creatures of habit. I've had enough of them to understand that every dog is different, just like every person is different. So if you know your dog, and all of a sudden you start to see things that are very unusual, as I said, for Shamrock, not sitting in her favorite spot. We have a couch by a window, and she would go there every day and sit for hours. All of a sudden, she didn't even go there anymore. That's got to be a warning sign. The flags have got to go up. But most people, they just overlook it, or if they tell the vet says, oh, it's just a million different reasons. Oh, it's just. But I don't believe that. I believe that when you start to see these things, even if it doesn't say the dog has dementia today, it could be a precursor. Yes, other things can be going on. And I stress this in the book. Always check with your vet and make sure nothing else is going on. Because all of these signs can also be many other diseases and many other, like you said, the ear medication. But how many people tell me, gee, my dog, you know, she's not hearing as well and her sight isn't as good. Well, that could be separate things, but all of a sudden, and she's clingy and she's not sleeping and she's circling. Oh, yeah, well, how many more signs do you need to put the pieces together? It's like a puzzle. And if we can just keep connecting the dots and the little pieces, all of a sudden you've got the bigger picture.
And I always think that we're the expert in our own dogs. And like our vets don't know to ask, oh, did she bark at the mailman today? You know, did she sleep in her favorite spot? Like, you know, that it's up to us to kind of be able to, you know, come prepared with like, these are the things that are concerning in the behavior, right? Because they can't tell us, right? We have to go by this behavior.
Well, that's why I put the dishiform in the book. I could have just explained it in a chapter, but I wanted the form so that people would be able to at least fill it out after watching their dog. And then take it to their vet for an open discussion. And hopefully the vet will be receptive to seeing, oh my goodness, you have these changes and they keep happening. Even if you keep it for a couple of weeks and say, oh, look at that. It could really open your eyes as to what's happening. Because like every day we're all busy and it's very hard sometimes to notice things. But if you know what to look for, which is what Disha gives you, then it'll make it a lot easier to be able to see what's happening before it happens.
Absolutely. And so I know so many people listening are probably thinking, you know, is there any way to prevent this from happening? And I really appreciated this section of the book. I'm sure the listeners know that, you know, I'm somebody who is on the holistic end of the spectrum when it comes to taking care of my dogs. You know, I always joke my dog and I have the same chiropractor, you know, it's absolutely true. And just thinking about these things, I was just like cheering, right? Because I'm doing these things because I think it's the healthiest thing to do because I've lost so many dogs to cancer. And it had honestly never occurred to me about the connection with, you know, cognitive dysfunction in dogs. And then just being like, oh, thank God, these things are already on my radar. You know, I haven't had a dog with this cognitive issue, but at least I'm focused on all the right things.
Well, having focus on those things, if I can just make a point, is good for everything.
Right.
Nothing that we recommend is going to hurt your dog if they're predisposed to have cancer or kidney disease or liver disease. Everything in the book was derived from my discussions and working with over 50 experts in this field. Holistic, yes, 90% of them were. But I also worked with researchers and active physicians who are currently trying to find cures for dementia in both people and in dogs, because the people that I talk to who are major experts in the field all say that it really doesn't matter if it's a person or an animal. This is a disease that starts in the brain with the plaque forming in the brain. That's not unique to people. It happens to dogs. And that's the first thing we need to admit, that dogs get dementia. That's hard for pet parents to realize.
So, you know, one of the things that you talk a lot about in the book is the diet. And it was making me think, I don't know if anybody's familiar with that book called Grain Brain by Dr. Perlmutter, but talking about like the effects of gluten and sugars and carbohydrates on the grain or on the brain and the body. And, you know, I've even seen references where Alzheimer's is sometimes called type 3 diabetes,
yes,
because there's a connection with like the insulin resistance affecting the brain, and that so many people diagnosed with type 2 diabetes then end up with these dementia and other problems going on because of what's affecting the rest of their body is now impacting their brain as well. So yeah, I was like cheering on the section about the diet.
And many physicians are recommending keto type plant-based diets for people with the possibility of getting dementia because of diabetes. And the reason is that the sugars add to what's happening in the body, and anything that's happening in the body is happening in the brain. We always think the brain is kind of separate, and I don't know why we do, but I guess we're kind of taught the brain is the think area and the body is disposing of everything else. But it's really not true. The brain monitors everything. And when you have too much fat in the body, when the diet is such that it's too many carbohydrates, that has to go somewhere. And the blood filters it right through to the brain. And plaque is formed. And once that plaque is formed, it forms over, the easiest way to explain it is memory avenues. And that's where that short circuiting will occur. It's like putting gump in the middle of a brain cell and saying, right, here, forget all this. It doesn't exist.
And then, you know, the other things that you touch on, right, are like over-vaccination, the use of chemical products, you know, the flea tick, the heartworm, the things like spay-neuter. You know, I've talked about this over on the Alternative Dog Moms, where being in the rescue and shelter community like I am, you know, spay-neuter is such a topic, and embracing that there are these alternative options out there, these alternative surgeries that aren't being taught to vets and that could have better health benefits for our dogs. Anyway, there's like all of these different health choices that we can make from a young age for our dogs that actually will affect them long term. And I think you said that was one of the biggest things that surprised you, was you thought you were writing this book for pet parents who have senior dogs, but then realizing like, oh no, it starts from when they're puppies, that all these little choices we make along the way can help move things in the right direction.
Yeah. And it's such a revelation for me, because I never thought of it that way.
Right. Well,
gee, if I had started when she was a puppy, what could have happened? But we don't think of it. We think of it only once they're older and starting to show signs. But there are so many things, as you said, with vaccinations, with chemicals, we put poisons on our dogs and we don't think the slightest thing about it because the vet says they need it. Well, I found many alternatives, and the vets have given me that I interviewed all gave me many alternatives that I put in the book for spay and neuter, for flea and tick, for anything that could be avoided. Even vaccinations, a better way to give vaccinations, to use titers. We don't need all the vaccinations that we give puppies. Yes, maybe there are some, and even in the book, the vets have stated that if a state says you have to, you have to, but there are better ways to do it.
One of the things that I had learned about recently, too, is about like the oral health connection, you know, and I usually do like a commercial spot during my podcast for this product called Teef. That's like a probiotic type powder that you put in your dog's water, because like, let's face it, dogs do not want their teeth brushed, you know, like I commend anybody who's ever able to do that.
Oh, I fight with mine all the time. I do still force them to be brushed, but yes, Teef is a great product. It was recommended, and so many of the veterinarians I spoke to sing its praises, because what we don't realize is that the teeth are connected through the sinuses into the brain.
Right.
So if the teeth are decayed, or if the teeth have plaque, that's forming. If it's forming on the teeth, you can best believe that it will be transferring through the blood to the brain. So instead of taking those risks, if you use a product like Teef, it can really make a difference. But if you've got a dog that's already got plaque, now the next step is the veterinarian says, okay, we need to bring him in and anesthetize him and get rid of the plaque, because, you know, dental disease is really a problem for dogs. Wait a minute. Is that the only way we can do this? And I don't think I've ever heard a veterinarian give me an alternative. And it wasn't until I was researching the book that I learned that there are many veterinarians that do non-anesthetic dental care and cleaning. Yes, there are cases, and I won't say there aren't, when it is necessary to have anesthesia for a dog for a cleaning or for a dental work. But for the most part, one veterinarian who specializes in dental work actually told me she takes her fingernail and just keeps maneuvering in the dog's mouth and gets the plaque off. If you wipe their mouth after they eat, you have that much less chance of the plaque forming. And if you use products like Teef, you're just doing the right things for your dog.
And this connects, right, with the carbs and the sugars in the food as well, too, you know. So, yes, for all of my friends that listen over on the Alternative Dog Moms, where we talk about all these health issues, you know, we're all on the right track for so many reasons, because it makes, you know, this difference in this canine cognitive dysfunction issue, too. And one of the things that, I mean, I think is just so exciting about the book is like all of the different research, you know, that you give on the treatment options. And I mean, you just like list out so many different things. Again, everything is cited and you give resources and, you know, in the back, like the links to everything, just all these, I love tools in the toolbox, right? Like I want to have all the tools in the toolbox and I want to know what they are. And like you said, you know, you go to the vet and it's like, oh, here's this medication. And like, oh, if that doesn't work, like, oh, well, I don't know. There's a medication. Right. Yeah. And so adding like all these things in about CBD and omega-3 fatty acids and changing the diet and filtering the water, even after you're already seeing these signs, even after you've gotten the diagnosis, it all makes a difference.
Anything that you can do that gives the dog a leg up, pardon the expression, on their body functioning better. First of all, if you change their food, which truthfully, when dogs get to a certain point in cognitive issues, by looking at the ingredients, are you helping to give a good feeding for their brain? Should be the first question. And if you're not, then change their food. Raw is always an option, but not everybody wants to do raw. There are ways for people who say, well, I don't have the time, I can't do this, I can't do that. There are so many alternative treatments given. Supplements are incredible what they do. Salmon oil. I found with Shamrock, it made like a new dog just giving her salmon oil. And it's not that hard to do, but the omega-3s feed the brain. There are so many other supplements, and we go through them in the book, so many treatments that before you say, oh, well, there's nothing I can do to help this dog, you have to give these things a try. And we tried to look at every type of parenting and say, okay, let me give you as many things as I can so that you can make a choice and say, well, okay, I can't do everything, but I can do something. Pick what you like. The other thing is so many pet parents get to a point where the things that the doctor has been giving them, the medications, are not working. And they come down to, okay, despair. There's nothing I can do. Well, that's not true either, because there are things, and these supplements and these treatments and acupuncture and doggy massage and doga all add a piece to the layers of how you start to bring this dog back to better health. I can't promise you, I cannot, that they won't succumb to dementia and that it won't turn into full-blown Alzheimer's. Unfortunately, I can't say that, and neither can anybody else in this day and age. But we can sure make sure that that dog has the best quality of life and lives as long as possible with a feeling that you've done everything right to help them, instead of just sitting back and saying, oh, well, nothing I can do. I'm in total despair. I cry every night. I can't take this anymore. The vet said it's time. Goodbye. Don't get me started on that one.
And I mean, I'm sure also, you know, more than 10, I guess, almost 10 years ago now, my first dog, Lucy, who is the logo for the podcast, we went through a crazy time trying to get her properly diagnosed with what ended up being an extremely rare type of cancer. And, you know, at one point early in the process, someone in my life had said kind of like, oh, well, I guess it's time, you know, why are you doing all of this? And, you know, I'm glad I didn't listen to them. And we had another like year, almost a year and a half together with her. And it was so much good time, you know, like so much of it was good time. We have so many great photos and videos and memories and laughs that we had and snuggles that we had and moments that we had. And when the time did come, you're like, I did everything and now is the time, you know. And we spent a ton of money, I am sure, and time and effort in that last year and a half. But it's like, I wouldn't trade a moment of it for what we got. And so I'm sure it's this way too. Like, yes, they're having this, but you're still, they're still them. You're still, while there are challenges and things are different, you're still having so much good time in there too. So many good moments that like, it is worth it to try for them.
And think about the fact that once you kind of understand that this dog has dementia, but that there are so many things I can do, if you just try, then every minute of every day is an extra. It's an added, it's a joy. It becomes even more important. Shamrock and I used to sit and have picnics on the floor because I couldn't get her to eat. And we would listen to classical music together. And I would turn the lights down low and I would just hug her. I can't replace those memories because they are just so precious in my heart. And I wouldn't have given that time up for anything. But if I had just said, okay, it's time. I talked to so many parents whose dogs are now, they're aware, have dementia. And the first thing they say is, I guess it's time. And I want to scream. Because just saying, I guess it's time, means you've given up on that dog. Have you tried everything? Have you even tried this, 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 and this? I know it's hard. I used to spend almost every night from probably about 10 o'clock until 3 o'clock in the morning, going in and out and in and out with her, or trying to put her to sleep for a while. It's a hard life. I'm not saying it's easy. But if that dog is your baby, and every minute you have with that dog is precious to you, and you're You're not seeing the dog suffering. That's the one beauty of this disease and the bad part of the disease. They're not in pain. And no matter what people tell you, well, they look like they're in pain. No, they don't. They're somewhere else. Their brain is not functioning, but they have no idea what they're doing. I used to watch her circle for hours. You can't distract them. You can't stop them. But she's not in pain. So it's the kind of thing that if you understand the stages and what's happening, then you can kind of guide your own behavior and actions by that. But I have talked to parents who have told me, I got them on the right treatment, and it's like a new dog. And now all of a sudden I've had more time with them.
Yeah.
From the first time that we realized that something might have been wrong with Shamrock, let's say after Clover died, I had 6 more years. No, it's almost 7 more years. I wouldn't have given that up for anything.
Right. So, and you also cover in the book, which, you know, I always appreciate, right? Like talking about how to know when it really is time and talking about like the quality of life things to look for. And so you're also not shying away from that fact as well. And I'm just saying that because I want everyone to understand like just how comprehensive everything that you put together is. This book is such an amazing resource for all pet parents. You know, when it's time, there's a way to help you kind of understand that it is time and to help you make that decision and feel comfortable that you're doing the right thing.
Thank you. It was important to me because too many times I heard, well, it's probably time. But I wanted to know, how do you kind of know, especially with a dog that you can't see them getting better, but you don't see them getting worse? So how do you know? And that's what I tried to get from the doctors that I talked to. How do I really know? How can I feel good and say, I've done everything I can, and now it's time to let them go? It was a hard chapter to write.
I can imagine.
You have to understand, this all happened. I started researching this book a little less than a year after my last experiences with Shamrock.
Okay, I was going to ask
that. Really, really hard. But it was the only thing that was helping me to recover from it. Because I kept saying, well, what if? And why didn't I? Because I started seeing things and saying, well, why didn't I know that? I should have known that. I've had 11 dogs. So I was really blaming myself for what happened to her. And I didn't want other pet parents to go through that. I wanted them to understand, yes, there does come a time when you kind of have to say, now it's time to let them go. I was lucky Shamrock made the decision for me.
I was curious, yeah, how did you just get this idea? You know, was it just to help yourself or help others? Or when you start, I'm going to talk about some of the people that you interviewed here in just a minute, but like, how did you this all kind of come about?
Oh, gosh. I was in grief. I really was. And I started researching on the internet because I felt guilty. I did. I said, I've never had a dog that had this. Why didn't I know about this? And the more I researched, the more I realized I didn't know anything. And I said, if I don't know anything, what about the other parents? And my kids had just gotten a couple of little dogs, the 6-month, 6-week-old. And I'm saying to myself, are they going to know what to do with those dogs? They didn't know. I was the mommy parent for all our dogs. They're not going to know. They just want dogs because they always had dogs. And the more I researched and the more I started to talk to people who did have dogs that had dementia, the more I realize that most people have no idea what to do with this disease. They kind of get to a point, they're so frustrated, it's so hard. And they kind of just give up. I'm going nuts. Well, standing outside in my underwear at 3 o'clock in the morning, I wasn't doing any better. But there had to be an answer. and I've been a writer all my life. So I turned to the one thing I knew. I started putting down what happened with Shamrock. And I talked to her vets and asked them if they would kind of send me her medical records so I could coordinate with my thinking so that I was sure that nothing that I was coming up with was just my imagination. Sometimes we want to cloud certain things, so I made sure. And then once I saw the chronology, I realized there was a pattern. And if there's a pattern, then maybe there's an answer. And that's when I started to reach out, mostly to holistic doctors, because I knew they would be more open to the topic. And all I said was, do you treat dogs for dementia, or do you discuss it with your parents, even if their dogs are puppies? The responses were incredible. Most of them were very open to talk to me. And that's how it began. I started to do interviews and get more and more information until there was so much information that I started to break it down according to what I knew happened to Shamrock. And then I would see how they were interacting with me as to what I could have done, should have done, or why maybe it was happening and what prevention I could have tried. Again, with the hope that it never lands on your doggy's door. If I could help one pet parent not go through what I went through with Shamrock, and one dog to not have to suffer the way Shamrock did. And when I say suffer, I mean that she kind of lost that connection to us at the very end. And that's what you always hope, that your baby takes that final walk with you. Right. I'm not sure she was really cognizant towards that time of even us being with her, but I hope she was. So it kind of just drove me on until all of a sudden there was a book in front of me.
So for all my friends who listen over on the Alternative Dog Moms and who follow all the holistic health, I just want to read off some of the names here to give you an idea of, you know, the caliber of people that Francine was speaking with. So we have Susan Thixton, Dr. Jean Dodds, Dr. Ava Frick, Dr. Edward, I always butcher this name, Basingwaite from Australia. Yeah, Dr. Doug Newman, Dr. Gerard Bushoff, Dr. Katie Kangas, Dr. Debbie Taraka, Dr. Evelyn Cass. And then you actually even spoke with my former vet, Dr. Pema, who now goes by Dr. Deb Malou. She was our vet for probably 6 years. We had to drive about an hour and a half each way to get to her office. And then I ended up, right after COVID, I ended up finding somebody a little closer that I've been working with the last couple of years. But yeah, we used to make the drive.
Well, she took a lot of books, so if you need more, she's got them.
So, I mean, I know that's not an exhaustive list, but those, like, I'm like, oh, I know this name, I know this name, I know, you know, it was really a who's who.
If you look, there's research people from the University of Texas, Texas A&M, from all different universities all over the country, but also from studies that have been done, and from the Dog Aging Project, which has been a source of research of dogs for a 10-year project. And they take special care to include dementia as one of the things that they study, and they're constantly coming out with new information. But one thing, which there's so much to cover, is doctors like Dr. Dale Bredesen. He is foremost in people dementia and does so many studies. And to be able to talk to someone of his caliber and to relate to what happens with people, to what happens with dogs, was really incredible to be able to share that type of experience, because that's what we as pet parents forget. We see it in people, but we don't imagine it in our dogs. And he was able to kind of give me a lot of the association between the two things. And that helped a great deal also. And I hope that that pet parent can take something away from that to understand the disease a little better. I think in the book I mentioned that when I started to notice certain things in Shamrock, I related it to my 96-year-old uncle and how I was seeing the same things in him, and he never acted like that. All of a sudden, he would be enraged or get stuck in a corner. And you start to say, wow, Shamrock's doing that. Maybe I need to pay attention.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about your experiences with people in your life as well, because my grandmother is 99. She'll be 100. God willing, and the creek don't rise this year in August. And
yes, God willing, that's for sure.
You know, it's really only been the last less than 5 years, I'd say, where it got really muddled and, you know, was noticeably, you know, like she had maybe slowed down, you know, kind of for a while physically, but like, you know, it's really been within these last few years. And about a year ago, like she was living with my parents up until about a year ago when, you know, it just became too much that they needed help. And they had like, not round the clock, but they had extra help in that last year she was with them. And yeah, so I could totally relate with some of the people experiences also.
Which is why I make a point of it in the book, because sometimes people have a very hard time when they look at their puppies, so playful and joyful, and think, my dog, dementia? Nah. But when you think about what people go through when they have this disease, if you can just think about your playful little puppy being turned into that and having no cognitive ability to decide whether they have to go to the bathroom or whether they ate. We've seen dogs that eat so much food because they forgot that they just ate. So it can work in so many ways if you can just make the connections.
Well, Francine, this is such an important work. I'm so excited to share it. We'll have links in the show notes. So can you tell everybody where they can find you if they want to learn more?
Yes. The publishers of the book is Golden Quill Press, and they can find us at www.goldenquillpress.com/dogdementia.html.
Well, I'll definitely have a link for everybody.
A little long, but if you have the link, it'll help.
No problem.
But if they put in Golden Quill Press, they can find the book.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I think this is such an important resource. Thank you so much for sharing everything with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate your giving it the time. I hope that your audience will realize it really is a very important topic for all pet parents, whether you have puppies or whether you have senior dogs, and that I appreciate your having seen what I tried to do with the book and express that to your readers. That's really important to me also. So thank you very much.
I'm so grateful to Francine for all that she shared with us about canine cognitive dysfunction and for sharing her story and Shamrock's story with us. Make sure you check the link in the show description to get a copy of Francine's book. I really love how it's written for pet parents with all this information from so many different experts, as well as combining her own experiences of having lived with this disease. I've often thought that as pet parents, we really get to be experts in the health conditions, the medical conditions that our dogs have, and we have so much knowledge to share with each other. I mean, it was almost 9 years ago since we lost our Lucy, but I'm still in the Insulinoma Dog Facebook group and still try to jump in and offer any support or suggestions where I can. I know I've been so focused on preventing cancer in my dogs that it had honestly never occurred to me before. Like, I know that dogs can get canine cognitive dysfunction, and I know I have one friend in particular who I remember went through this with one of her dogs, but it had never really been on my radar. And it's so interesting to me that all the things that I focus on with my dog's health, right, with their diet, with trying to limit the chemicals that we use on them or around them in our home, all of these things are so important to canine cognitive dysfunction also. Like, for once, I feel like I'm doing all the right things, even if I wasn't focused on that specific outcome. And I really liked her focus that age is not a disease. You guys know I sometimes like to throw in snippets of songs that I'm reminded of. And, you know, I totally thought about pulling up Aaliyah's Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. But, you know, when you think about the whole R. Kelly situation, that hasn't particularly aged real well, right? But it is a good reminder that our dogs can and should be living long, happy, healthy lives. So I'll have some resources for you in the show description for where you can find things like non-anesthetic dental cleanings or what the alternative to spay-neuter surgeries are and how to get the dog health journal. And there's also a fabulous mushroom-based tincture from my friend Angela Ardolino with her MycoDogs line of mushroom products that's specifically made for canine cognitive support. And if you have any questions for me, you can reach out anytime. So that'll do it for this episode of the Believe in Dog podcast. If you like this episode, remember that you can always leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's pretty much the biggest compliment that you can give a podcaster. You can always find me at Believe in Dog Podcast on Facebook or at Erin the Dog Mom on Instagram. So until next time, this is Erin Scott sending you hugs and belly rubs. Believe in Dog Podcast is a production of Hugs and Belly Rubs, LLC.